obligations, a heavy burden often called the independence debt. Mr. Aristide uncovered this history only after he had already been ousted from office the first time, his aide said, when a military coup d'etat deposed him in 1991 and forced him into exile in the United States. He began immersing himself in the growing scholarship on a history that even as Haiti's president, he knew little about. After the Americans helped restore him to power, he was re-elected in 2000 and intensified his research into Haiti's past. He would call many times asking for more information, recalled Dr. Francis Saint-Hubert, a Haitian physician who had studied the links between the abysmal state of public health in Haiti and the money siphoned off by France. On the bicentennial anniversary, Jean-Bertrand Aristide upped the political ante by declaring the precise amount he said France owed Haiti. $21,685,135,571. French diplomats and some Haitians mocked the multi-billion-dollar figure as a misguided publicity stunt by a demagogue trying to maintain his grip on power. A group of 130 Haitian intellectuals denounced the restitution campaign as a desperate attempt to distract attention from the Jean-Bertrand Aristide government's totalitarian drift, incompetence and corruption. A French foreign ministry spokesman said France did not need to take lessons from Haiti's leaders. But a New York Times analysis of the long-term damage done by sending enormous sums of money to France shows that Haiti's losses may have been surprisingly close to Jean-Bertrand Aristide's figure of $21.68 billion. In fact, his estimate may have been a bit modest. The New York Times scoured thousands of pages of archival government documents to determine how much Haiti sent to France over the course of generations, not just in official payments to former slaveholders, but also for a loan to help pay them. The New York Times found that Haiti paid France a total of $560 million in today's dollars. But that only begins to account for the loss. With the help of 15 leading economists from around the world, we modelled what might have happened if that money had gone into the Haitian economy, rather than being siphoned off to France without getting any goods or any services in return. The New York Times' estimates found that over time, the payments to France cost Haiti from $21 billion to $115 billion in lost economic growth. Put in perspective, that is anywhere from 1 to 8 times the size of Haiti's entire economy in 2020. We were building a path to the truth, Jean-Bertrand Aristide said in the interview, without being told the outcome of the New York Times' analysis.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Thank you. I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady. You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear listeners. Thank you so very much for joining us on today's fresh episode of Muslim Lady. In the studio, I have the honor and privilege of being joined by my sister in faith and humanity and a special guest, Sister Razia Shamli. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, my dear sister.
We've been talking a few times in our show about plastic surgery.
In women, we've talked about.
Oh, we talked about it. Oh, so today we want to talk about plastic surgery specified to men.
Yeah.
Because we talked about women.
Yeah.
And their plastic surgery.
We didn't really talk about women either. Men do not have this problem as much as women
do. That's exactly what I wanted to say. Men honestly aren't that self-conscious about themselves as women are.
You know?
And that's why they're not targeted as much either. And enterprises and corporations haven't been able to feed on this insecurity as much as it's been able to do with women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why cosmetics are targeting women, plastic surgery, fashion. All of these things are targeting women because women are more self-conscious about their appearance rather than men.
Yeah, that is true. As I said, one of the reasons that women have this addiction to the social media is like I was looking at this really nice debate between two guys on YouTube, and he was like, when a woman is, she has her Instagram, she's a teen, she's 17 and she has an Instagram page and she's just posting, you know, from time to time her daily life. And then she goes on a vacation and she starts posting one picture of herself in a bikini, exposing her skin. And that's when like an explosion happens. Likes, new followers. And she goes into the explore. And she gets reward for what she's doing. Exactly. So one action, a lot of reward. Another action. Then she says she goes, like, if she goes on that trip, on a trip once a year, then that reward that she got from all these likes and all this acceptance, even the, you know, the really beautiful girls, they say, oh, nice look. You know, I love like what you're wearing, or I love like how
your
this
pose,
part of your body, looks,
whatever,
right?
Yeah.
That approval, that sense of approval that she gets reinforces in her and motivates her to go on another vacation very soon and more videos and pictures exposing her body. And then it just turns into, it makes a new personality out of her.
But
and
then here's the thing. I'm thinking if the dude was just as ripped, right, and fit as beautiful 17-year-old girl or whatever, he would get a lot of acknowledgement on social media as well, right? Number one, if the girl wasn't so beautiful and fit, she would still get a degree, but a lower degree of acknowledgement, but it would be more in the tone of, it would be more of like a political nuance to it. They would try to be proving a point by acknowledging her.
That even if you're not perfect, you're still beautiful.
Yes, but they don't do it for men.
Things.
Yeah, exactly. See, that's what it, and I think that's why the Quran, when it talks about how men and women should be presenting themselves in society, when the Holy Book addresses women, it says, cover yourselves up, number one, and don't flaunt yourselves. Because the Quran knew this is an innate quality of women.
Mm-hmm.
They like to be noticed.
Which verse are you talking about?
When it talks about tabarruj, flaunting themselves, displaying themselves. Because women like to be noticed and praised for their beauty.
The idea
men,
of acceptance.
Men, meh, right?
Right?
But for women, that's just like wonderful for them.
Yeah, that's true. But at the same time, so many things are changing. Although when you're comparing psychologically a girl with a boy, a man with a woman, and of course that need for acceptance is so much higher for a girl. I mean, to be seen as a beautiful girl and to be loved and cherished and to be paid attention. Compared to boy, they don't need these things, really.
They
need it in other aspects. But I think the norms or the social media is creating needs for the boys these days. That
just
look,
like capitalism, consumerism.
Exactly. That you have to look, you have to be fit. You have to have six packs. You have to have like certain measure like of chin. Or like there are certain standards, bodily standards for men too these days.
Obviously.
And I'm saying that they are fitting them into the boys'
brains. Is it necessarily a bad thing though? If it boosts relationships, if it boosts confidence, if it makes you overall healthier and... What's wrong with it?
The problem is that it's not boosting their things. It's turning into many hours of in a day of going to the gym and injecting certain hormones to their
bodies. Yeah, that's why we talked about balance.
There is no balance.
No, that's their problem.
There is no balance.
It doesn't necessarily mean aestheticism and aspiring for beauty is necessarily a wrong thing. John? You are listening to Muslim Lady while we are discussing the interesting topic of plastic surgery and how it applies on the two genders. We're going to be back after a short break, so stay with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Welcome back, sisters, brothers, ladies, gentlemen. This is Muslim Lady from IRIB English Radio.
Like, remember a couple of months ago, we were talking about self-care? And we talked about how the Prophet used to have use kohl, perfume, how he used to clean his garments, how he used to, even he had certain handkerchiefs. He used to wipe, you know, wet wipes with the scent of saffron and other like natural fragrances, and how he combed his hair, how he looked at himself in the mirror, how he was careful to use, to remove, you know, extra hair from his body, how he cared to be very attractive for his wives, how he, used henna. And, you know, there's a beautiful hadith that what are the benefits of henna and this and that. We did talk about that.
I remember.
Is the balance.
Yeah.
Not the six packs.
What's wrong with six packs?
If you're injecting,
if you just get natural six packs,
if you're
through
a doctor,
diet and hard work,
if you're a father of three children, and if you're a busy working man, and if you can, is it possible for you to have to develop six packs and to have all these responsibilities? The six packs are single guys who don't have any families to take care of.
All right, good for them.
Yeah,
I mean, all of these things, even beauty for women, it is redefined through different stages of her life, you know? Some things that look beautiful on a teen or a woman in her early 20s cannot be pulled off by a more mature woman. Their style, their fashion, their color choices, even their makeup application changes through the stages of their lives. And it's the same thing for men. At a certain stage, when you're in your early 20s, you're a bachelor, you've got no responsibilities, all you do is hit the books and hit the gym, hey, enjoy your six-pack. And then after a while, you get a little older, you settle down, you have kids, you enjoy the dad bod.
It's becoming a trend these days. Like back like 20 years ago, to have to develop six-pack, it was the job of a very small minority in the society where they were bodybuilders.
Yeah.
Nowadays, many men, like average men, they are tending towards six-packs because...
Wait. Is it hindering their performance in other fields of life?
You know, these days, there is less tendency towards marriage. And obviously, there's more time. They're bachelors. And these bachelors need to continue looking handsome and attractive because they want to have a partner. They want to find a girlfriend.
Okay, then that's just evolution.
No, it's not a good evolution. You know, what I'm just trying to say is that one of the reasons that there is a lot of more plastic surgery these days uh-huh. is because there are so many more single men because they're not in any relationship. And
where are all the women then?
No. The women are also they have their own story. Let's not open their story. Mm-hmm. Now we're just talking about men. So men are tending more towards plastic surgery because, look, if you're in your early 20s and you get married, you get settled, your six pack would be your number 10 priority in life.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're in your middle 30s and you're still single, your six packs would be your number 2 priority.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm getting? I'm just saying that because they are not in permanent relationships, because there is no family,
mm-hmm.
these men, they always have to look fresh, sexy, attractive. So they have to have these,
work on themselves.
But as you enter into the relationship, as you said, you enter into the different phases of your life, a physical attraction always will remain something very important until the end of your life, but it will lower down in terms of priority. It will not be your second priority. It will be your fifth priority. And this is my understanding. This is my analysis of why men are tending, opting towards
plastic surgery.
No, plastic surgery and body fitness. Mm-hmm. The way like working like on your six packs. One reason that why men are opting more towards certain physical features, like growing a six-pack, developing a six-pack, is because, as you said, like in the nature of video games, you have to overcome something, like it's a process, and you have to conquer it. And like it's an aim that they have to pursue, and the reward is great, because the way it has been displayed among the other sex is that, like, if a man has a six pack, it looks very attractive to a woman, and it's not a difficult thing to obtain. So he goes after developing it. He spent 6 months on it, and there he goes with a six pack.
Oh, and this doesn't apply to all men, but this is one way to look at it. Right. That because some men literally they have a stable partner. Them and their partner are into the healthy lifestyle and bodybuilding. They're not competitive bodybuilders, but that's their method of exercising.
Mm-hmm.
There's that, and then there's like dudes who are just looking to pick up women with their abs. You know, when it comes to that, it doesn't matter whether it's abs or a car or a new haircut or whatever. That is like, I feel it's an uncool motif for a man to develop, no matter... It's an uncool motif for a man to develop an asset, no matter what that asset is. To pick up women? That's ridiculous.
To develop six packs because of a woman.
Or whatever else. Or like buy an expensive car or whatever. That's all the time we have. This was a more complicated topic than I anticipated. And obviously we're going to have to talk about it more. You can join us on future episodes of Muslim Lady. Until then, I leave you in the care and protection of the Almighty.
Who is the lover?
Allah.
Who is Ar-Rahman?
Allah.
Who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illallah. Muhammadur Rasulullah. Muhammad is the messenger. Allah is our return.
The Quran, given by God to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, more than 1400 years ago, as guidance for humanity.
La ilaha illallah.
Muhammadur Rasulullah.
Quran speaks about women.
The Quran teaches the equality of men and women in the eyes of Allah.
Chapter 33, verse 35.
All praise is due to the one and only. master of all creation.
Modesty and chastity are encouraged by the Quran, both for women and for men.
Chapter 24, verses 30 and 31.
He is the sustainer and the maintainer of the whole universe.
God created us from one male and one female and made us into nations and tribes so that we make to know one another, not to despise each other.
Chapter 49, verse 13.
La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah, Muhammad is the messenger, to Allah is our return.
The Quran has indicated worthy women in history just as it has mentioned such men, and has commended them greatly.
Chapter 3, verse 37.
Food for thought.
Salam. And we start the day by contemplating upon a valuable piece of advice from the Prophet's infallible successor, Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace upon him. Three characteristics bring about hatred, that is, hypocrisy, oppression, and self-conceit.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
The meadows in the foothills of the Swiss Alps have turned white these days, with locals calling it May snow. But it has nothing to do with snow. It's all about narcissus blooms covering the hills above the town of Montreux. Locals call the scene May snow because it looks like a blanket of snow from a distance. The flowers have been a tourist attraction since the 19th century, but factors such as urbanization have caused their decline in the past few years. Artists in a small town in the United Kingdom have created a massive bumblebee mural, hoping to raise awareness about this vanishing species. The mural was painted on the playing field of a primary school in the town of Haptonbridge. It was debuted on International Bee Day. The artist used paints typically used to draw lines for football pitches. Scientists say rising temperatures and heavy pesticide use are contributing to the decline in the number of bumblebees across Europe and North America. They say the population reduction rate is consistent with mass extinction of a species altogether. Children at a school have also created a white flower meadow to help encourage bees to pollinate. A print art exhibition chronicling nearly a century's worth of artistic achievements by a Chinese woodcarver has been unveiled in the city of Suzhou near Shanghai. The carved into wood exhibit features nearly 80 of Huang Yongyu's wood blocks and prints. Woodblock printing is a form of Chinese art dating back hundreds of years. In this form, patterns are carved out of a thick sheet of wood to create a type of multi-layered surface. Then ink is applied in various stages to print the image and its colors. The humble 98-year-old artist said during his years of practicing art, he learned that sincerity mattered more than technique. The exhibition was launched in collaboration between Suzhou Museum and the Beijing Fine Art Academy.
Persian fallow deer is a unique but endangered species known for its sleek and spotted body. In this report, our correspondent Youssef Jalali takes us on a quick tour around one of the world's few protected shelters of Persian fallow deer in Iran's city of Sari.
We had to keep quiet and avoid making any sounds to film them, as they are shy and swift, and the slightest sound could send them sprinting and jumping away. Over 60 Persian fallow deer roam in Dashtinaz Wildlife Refuge in Iran's northern city of Sari. The endangered species is carefully protected here to be safe from predators and poachers.
The Persian fallow deer is native to Iran's Khuzestan province, but due to loss of habitat and threats posed to them by predators such as jackals and wild cats, they are endangered and need to be protected in semi-natural refuges like this one.
Persian fallow deer are mainly indigenous to open woodland areas spanning from East Mediterranean coasts to West and Southwest Iran. By 1875, they had gone extinct in all of their main habitats, except in Southwest Iran. After a captive breeding program, the population has rebounded from only a handful of deer in the 1960s to over 200 individuals in Iran.
Dashtinaz Wildlife Refuge is 55 hectares wide. It was introduced in 1962 as a shelter for the Persian fallow deer when the species was on the brink of extinction. At that time, five deer were captured and translocated to this refuge. Over the past six decades, their number have been multiplied through captive breeding.
The Persian fallow deer is a rare ruminant mammal belonging to the family Cervidae. They're physically larger than other fallow deer, and their antlers are bigger and less palmate. Their special beauty has turned this sanctuary into a hot tourist attraction, in Iran's north.
This sanctuary is a tourist destination for visitors who would like to see the Hyrkanian forests in Iran's north and at the same time enjoy the wildlife and learn about efforts made to save the Persian fallow deer from extinction.
In 2015, the Persian fallow deer was registered in the IUCN Red List of Threatened Species. Dashtinaz authorities hope through continued captive breeding, the population of these special creatures will soon reach the desired number, and hopefully they will be reintroduced to their natural habitat in southwest Iran.
While they live far from their original habitat, these alluring creatures feel at home here, where they will be safe from the dangers lurking outside, which may lead to their extinction. So here, Persian fallow deer continue to embellish the nature and charm visitors with their beauty. Yusuf Jalali from Dashtinaz Wildlife Refuge in Sari.
The lush green oasis near Sudan's capital, Khartoum, has turned into a haven for dozens of exotic bears from all over the world. The sanctuary shelters over 100 bears of 13 different species. Here, visitors can feed lovebirds, parakeets, rosella bears, and many more. The owner of the sanctuary says he trained the bears over the years to make them human-friendly. Akram Yahia says he has a passion for bears and enjoys it when people come around to see the sanctuary. The sanctuary, which is part of the Marshall Nature Reserve, is a welcome break for the people from the hectic life in Khartoum and nearby cities.
He tried to create an environment that doesn't exist in Khartoum. These environments exist in other parts of Sudan, such as in the west of Sudan, in the east of Sudan, in rainy areas. These areas have environments such as this one, and perhaps even more beautiful. He created this environment in Khartoum, where there is not nature at all.
Domestic and foreign tourists are allowed there only 2 to 3 hours a day. The limited hours are so that the bear's living environment is not disturbed. The owner built the 400-square-meter sanctuary 4 years ago. Over the years, he has added trees, garden, pond, and mist nozzles for cooling off against Sudan's scorching heat. Yahia says he wants to expand the reserve in the future.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Indonesians have held a dazzling event to celebrate Vesak, a day traditionally observed by Buddhists in South Asia and Southeast Asia. People gathered at the sprawling Borobudur Temple in central Java and released lanterns into the sky. That's part of prayers marking the birth, enlightenment, and death of Buddha, a spiritual teacher who lived during the 6th century BC. The release of lanterns symbolizes letting go of negativity. The occasion lasts 3 days, which includes collecting holy water, sending off lanterns, and meditation. This year, the event was limited to some 1,200 people because of the coronavirus risk. Because of the outbreak of the pandemic, the ceremonies typically receive 20,000 people at the massive temple complex.
A group of over a dozen penguins has been released back to the sea after being given a second chance to live.
The condition of these specimens, which fortunately could be reinserted, is very common to find. They are animals that appear stranded on the coast, found with malnutrition, dehydration, hypothermia, and a high degree of parasitism. Specialists call this condition the stranded penguin syndrome.
The penguins were rescued and taken to the Mundo Marino Foundation, where they were rehabilitated. They were kept warm and were fed liquids until they could eat fish again. Before their release, blood and other samples were taken and a chip was implanted to track them. One of the penguins was a southern rock hopper, which is a species listed as endangered. Biologists at a rescue center say there are many reasons why penguins get stranded and malnourished. These include overfishing, global warming, and other environmental changes. Thousands of people crowd into the British city of Norwich to watch a 2-kilometer-long string of dominoes topple, while winding through town. Some 7,500 breeze blocks were set up for the event. The dominoes slinked through street buildings, windows, and even climbed up stairs and trees. The toppling lasted 30 minutes. The moving sculpture was installed across the city with the help of some 200 volunteers. The artistic director said the work was chosen partly because it was a spectacle and both disrupted the city and engaged its people.
There's a sense of anticipation that goes with the work. You will have seen people around town at the moment. Everybody's asking, what's going on? What's going on? And then when they realise what it is, then there's this sense of, oh, and when are you going to knock it over? So that it's a sculpture also that gets destroyed in many ways. And that's really part of the work as well. I mean, I like to think about it as a child almost playing with the city. You know, they're setting everything up and we all know they're going to knock it down at some point. And that's fun.
Daniel Bryan said he was excited about the project because it looked like a child had taken over the city with the joy of knocking down dominoes. The cascading dominoes ran through two cities, eventually ending at a site of Norfolk and Norwich Festival of Arts. The organizers say the goal of the installation was to bring unity to the community. Chilean paleontologists unearthed a rare, fully intact fossil of what is known as a sea dragon discovered from a melting glacier deep in Patagonia.
It is the first complete and excavated ichthyosaur that has been found in Chile. It also corresponds to one of the most complete fossils ever found on the planet for the Cretaceous period. It is the only pregnant ichthyosaur that's been found on the planet from the era between 129 and 139 million years ago. So it's incredibly important.
The 4-meter-long fossil is nicknamed Fiona and swam the seas some 250 million years ago. Scientists say this specimen will help them understand this species and its embryonic development. The expedition lasted over a month because of the remote nature of the find in the Patagonian glaciers. Paleontologists had to make a 10-hour hike just to get to the site. They also had to camp in extreme weather conditions while maneuvering tricky, rocky surfaces. But collecting and transporting the fossil was a whole other story.
As we went down excavating, weakening the rock, we realized the skeleton was mostly complete, so much that the bones were pushed inwards and we had to make 5 blocks of approximately 200 kilos each to move it.
The blocks were then airlifted to the Rio Seco Natural History Museum in southern Chile to be prepared for exhibition. The fossil was first discovered by Ruth Pedro more than a decade ago, but because of the site's harsh terrain, its extraction was a complex challenge. Scientists also discovered over 20 other specimens of the same species during the expedition, bringing the total found in the glacier area to 100.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today.
Raditu billahi rabba wa bil islam dina. Raditu billahi
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, dear brothers and sisters, salam and peace to all of you who are listening to today's special from IRIB English Radio. Our topic is the Shia of Imam Sadiq, peace be upon him.
Inna fil jannati nahran laban. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي وحسين وحسن.
Today, Wednesday, is the 23rd of Shawwal, 1443 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 4th of Khordad, 1401 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 25th of May, 2022 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. Let's open Holy Quran and we'll listen to verse 24 of chapter Sajda and then the important points of it.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Waja'alna minhum a'immatan yahduna bi'amrina lamma sabaru wa kanu bi'ayatina yuqinun.
And we made from among them leaders, guiding by our command, when they were patient, when they were certain of our signs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
The appointment of divine leaders is among the right of Allah. Certainty and patience with perseverance are two necessary conditions for leadership. A leader must have certainty in the aim, and he must have patience and perseverance until the last moment. Therefore, this verse points to be honors that the children of Israel, Bani Israel, obtained under the shade of perseverance and faith in order that it can be a lesson for others.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ala ali Muhammad kama sallaita ala Ibrahim wa ala ali Ibrahim innaka hamidun majid.
Who are the Shia? The Prophet said, by the one who holds my soul in his hand, this man, Imam Ali, Ali ibn Abi Talib, and his Shias will indeed be the successful ones on the Day of Judgment. It has been narrated by one of the companions of the Prophet of Islam. He said, the Prophet of Allah was with me when his daughter Lady Fatima came to greet him with her husband Ali. The Prophet of Allah raised his head and said, be happy, Ali, you and your Shia will be in paradise. The Prophet Muhammad himself was in fact the first person to use the term Shia. And what's more is that he always used the term in reference to Imam Ali. After the Prophet passed away, those who were loyal to Imam Ali were also known as the Shia. Dr. Fakhr Rohani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa bin asta'in. In this episode, we are going to be concerned with certain definitions and characteristics of typical Shi'i people as formulated by the sixth and infallible Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam. Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam indicated, كَذَبَ مَنْ زَعَمَ أَنَّهُ مِنْ شِيَعَتِنَا وَهُوَ مُتَمَسِّكٌ بِعُرْوَةِ غَيْرَنَا. Certainly, he's a liar who says that, who claims to be one of our Shi'is while he clings to other people or other trends, moral or intellectual trends. It indicates that those people who regarded themselves as people or followers of the Ahl al-Bayt, they are expected to follow the line of the Ahl al-Bayt, not only in terms of religious practices or, for example, performing rituals. Rather, in all aspects, she's expected to follow the lines of the Ahlul Bayt. And elsewhere, Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam indicated, نَحْنُ وَاللَّهُ نِعْمَةُ اللَّهِ الَّتِي أَنَعَمَ بِهَا عَلَى عِبَادِهِ وَبِنَا فَازَ مَنْ فَازَ. By God, we are the divine grace that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has bestowed upon people. And nobody attains any victory save through us. Now, we find that Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam elsewhere indicated, لَيْسَ مِنْ شِيَعَتِنَا مَنْ قَالَ بِاللِّسَانِ وَخَالَفَنَا فِي أَعْمَالِنَا وَآثَارِنَا وَلَكِنْ شِيَعَتِنَا مَنْ وَافَقَنَا بِاللِّسَانِهِ وَقَلْبِهِ وَاتَّبَعَ آثَارَنَا وَعَمَلَ بِأَعْمَالِنَا أُولَٰئِكَ شِيَعَتِنَا. Anybody who merely says that he is one of our Shi'is, however, he does other things or he does jobs that are not approved by us, we the Ahlul Bayt, we never do them. These people cannot claim to be Ashis. However, Ashis are those people who accept whatever we say, both in words and in his heart, his mind. And at the same time, he follows our footstep and does whatever we do. Certainly, they are Ashis.
Special topics for a special program. You can listen today, now and here, IRIB English Radio. Today's special.
The characteristics of a true Shia. What's that? The Shia is one who is tested through his wealth. How much of it does he kept aside for the help of others? In our present time, we are faced with many difficulties. For example, unemployment, which is the real root of all other forms of corruption, such as addiction to drugs, theft, robbery, and prostitution. Or problems with the youth getting married, difficulties for people finding affordable housing, difficulties in going for further education. Our society consists of people who claim to be Shia, however we see excessive amounts of wealth being wasted on useless things. Yet some people in the society do not even have the basic necessities of life. Therefore, the characteristics of the Shia must also be kept in view, and we must remember that we cannot only concentrate on the status and rewards that are promised to the Shia. Rather, we need to implement these characteristics within ourselves. Allahumma salli ala sayyidina Muhammadin nabiyil ummi wa ala alihi wa sahbihi wa sallim. Today's life lesson starts with a question: what about the soul's food? Imam Hassan, peace be upon him, said, I wonder about those who think about their body's food, but do not think about their soul's food. They keep undesirable food away from their belly, but filled up their heart with destructive subjects. Our people are usually quite careful with their food and do not start eating unless they know what it is. They avoid anything that looks doubtful, and some go to great length to ensure that the body receives good, clean, and healthy diet, to great lengths. Yet when it comes to the food for the soul, these same individuals will throw cautions to the winds. With eyes closed, unaware of the reality, they would have no hesitation in pouring down any mental food into their soul.
In my school of thought, I am proud that Allah chooses me my leader. Because my leaders, I trust them 100%. And I can only trust someone 100% if Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala chooses them for me. I am a Shia because those who have wilaya and guardianship from Allah are those who the Quran makes a reference to. I want everyone here to memorize this verse, 555. If anyone asks you, why are you Shia? Tell them it's because of 555. Surah Al-Ma'idah, verse 55. Allah tells you who your guardians are. Innama. Innama in Arabic is adatu hasrin. It's a restrictive phrase, which means only. Innama waliyukumullah. Allah is your guardian. You follow Allah unconditionally. Who else? Wa rasuluhu. And his messenger. He's your guardian in all matters, religion, world, everything. Rasulullah is your guide and guardian. And who's the third one? وَالَّذِينَ آمَنُوا, those who believe. Ya Quran, tell me, who are those believers who believe? It can apply to anyone who is a believer. No, the Quran gives you specific descriptions. وَالَّذِينَ آمَنُوا الَّذِينَ يُقِيمُونَ الصَّلَاةَ وَيُؤْتُونَ الزَّكَاةَ وَهُمْ رَاكِعُونَ. They are those who gave the zakat in the state of ruku'. And when you analyze history, this happened with Amir al-Mu'mineen. Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam, when he extended his hand to give that act of charity to the poor person. The imam was in nafila prayer, in mustahab prayer. The man came. He didn't want to be delayed. Please give me something. The imam just extended his hand and he gave him his ring. He is my imam who has that guardianship. That's why I'm a Shia. I'm a Shia because at Ghadir, Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi declared to the world who the wali is. Right? Didn't he say, Man kuntu mawla fa hadha aliyun mawla? Now other Muslims, you know what they say here? They say, yeah, the Prophet meant Ali is a friend. Because one of the meanings of mawla is friend. You know what I would say to that? I say two quick things here. I would say Rasulullah is going to strand 120,000 companions in the hot desert under the sun. And the poor companions, they just finished their hajjat al-wada' with the Prophet. People are tired after your hajj. What do you want to do? Who's gone to hajj here? What do you want to do right after hajj? You just want to go home. You want to go to your family. You want to rest. The Prophet strands them 3 days in the desert just so he can tell them, Ali's my friend. What logic are you going by? Secondly, fine, I accept that the Prophet was just saying he's his friend. If Rasulullah, the messenger of God, the greatest creation of God, strands 120,000 people in the desert, they're tired, they want to go home, just to tell them Ali is my friend, then believe me, no one other than Ali deserves to be followed after Rasulullah. If the Prophet is so sensitive, he's so sensitive about Ali, he tells the world he's my friend and he'll strand 100,000 companions, you better know who Ali ibn Abi Talib is. You better follow Ali ibn Abi Talib after the Prophet. If it's just about friendship, the Prophet goes to this great measure. What about guardianship? What about wilaya? What about khilafah? Even their interpretation, believe me, proves that I am on the right path in following Ali ibn Abi Talib. And who can you follow? Who can you find better than Ali ibn Abi Talib?
That was all for today's special. Inshallah, we will speak more about this interesting topic, and that is, who is a true Shia? Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we meet you soon. So may Allah bless all of you, and we leave you in Allah's protection. Have a nice time.
La ilaha illallah, Allahu Rabbi, Muhammad Nabi. علي إمامي لا فتى إلا علي علي إمامي علي إمامي علي إمامي لا إله إلا الله الله ربي محمد نبي علي إمامي لا فتى إلا علي علي إمامي علي إمامي علي إمامي.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.